Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R, KL7R. In Juneau, this is M0HBR in London. Hey there, Mike.
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Good morning, Bill. Have the soldering iron hot here, actually, as we speak. Over.
Oh, man. I feel bad about interrupting wizardry in progress. I'm sure it's something good, Mike. You're way ahead of me. I have melted a little bit of solder, but not much. And I'm sorry, I'm late. It's 06:55 British Summer Time on the 21st of May, and I guess that makes this solder smoke 23. What are you building?
I'm still wrestling with that amplifier. But I've made some headway. I've learned a lot about stability there, and I found out where the source of my SA612 carrier imbalance was coming from. There, over.
Oh man! Well, you've got the me and the listeners all on the edge of our seats. Tell us about the dreaded source of the carrier.
Well, it turns out there was no carrier that was the problem. The problem was self-oscillation. This thing is for 3.933 megahertz, and I kept seeing weird things in the scope. I kept seeing, you expect to see when you modulate a carrier to see the peak of, say, 3.9 megs to relatively stay the same location in the scope, but it would be jumping to different frequencies, jumping to different wavelengths on the scope, and it didn't make any sense to me, and I kept fiddling, and finally I took another receiver when I keyed up, and I found out I was oscillating down at 3.2 megahertz on kind of a free-running thing. I don't know what caused that. And 3.2 megahertz is not a harmonic of 3.933, but it is lower in frequency than 3.933, sort of like a subharmonic. So it was making it out of my seven pole low pass filter because it was lower in frequency. Anyway, I don't know what I did to fix it, but it went away. I think part of what I did to fix it was I fiddled around with my driver amplifier and I fiddled around with drive settings on, not drive settings, but bias settings on my final amplifier, and that seemed to make a big difference there. It just doesn't need a whole lot of bias on this FET to work there, so I just barely bias it, and I'm getting 3 to 4 watts out, and I've made a number of contacts, and they said I'm sounding better, and hopefully I'm not radiating all over the frequencies below 3.9 megahertz there. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR, yeah, well, it sounds like you're making great progress, and your troubles sound very familiar. It's not easy. It goes contrary to sort of the conventional wisdom about home brewing. The old timers especially always seem to think that transmitters are easy, but receivers are hard. And you run into this attitude a lot that, well, hams can build their transmitters, but building receivers should be left to the commercial manufacturers. And most of that comes from the tube days. But even then, I don't think it was all that valid. But when you get into the transistors, building the transmitters is not easy. In many ways, I found building the receivers a bit easier. You know, you're dealing with certainly dealing with much lower power levels, especially at RF on IF, and so you're much less prone to get oscillations. But once you start talking watts and not microwatts and milliwatts, once you start talking watts, it's real easy to get into the kind of oscillations that you're talking about. Doug DuMois does quite a bit of writing on this, and he talks about really low frequency oscillations, and he says a lot of times these kinds of unwanted oscillations take place at quite low frequencies, and he said cases where the transistor was cooking along in the audio frequency range, I think to the point where he could almost hear them screeching if he put his ears down to them, which I thought was really quite something. I'll have to look that up. It's in, I think it's in his QRP notebook or design notebook. But, yeah. So, well, that's the hard part, getting it all stable and on the right frequency. But if you're making contacts, then you're on the right track. And, yeah, a lot of times you could tell if it's causing trouble, or you could tell if there's low frequency oscillation going on by listening to the signal. You know, just take a receiver and listen to your output and tune up and down from the desired frequency. And if you've got a lot of hash, if you've got this kind of broadband hash going on above and below the frequency, obviously you have to turn your RF gain way down and disconnect the receive antenna. But if you hear a lot of hash above and below, that's usually an indication of low frequency oscillation going on. But great. And we discovered the 602 is innocent of the charge of passing unwanted carrier. And sounds like you're getting the amplifiers sorted. That's a British term, sorted out. Slipping into my vocabulary here. So, are you making these contacts on phone, or is this PSK31, or what mode are you in with the transmitter at this point? Go ahead.
Yeah, just voice. The net is on lower sideband, and I mentioned I was coming out on double sideband, and it caused all this. People got real interested, especially the people that are into hi-fi on HF. And he says, "Oh yeah, I flipped over to my white filter, and you had studio quality audio, a little muffled, but a really wide and low frequency response." And I said, "Well yeah, it's basically a direct conversion receiver in reverse with no audio shaping filtering yet, and probably 20 kilohertz wide on the lower side band, and another 20 on the other side, femto watts, but still the same." So they've been on voice. They've been 3 watts, 2 to 3 watts, and half of that, so that'd be a watt and a half or so. On lower sideband, 600-700 miles, and pretty regular. If I can hear them, my rule of thumb with QRP is if I can hear them S7, I can work them every time. That basically was the case here. These guys were S9, and I could work them with 2 or 3 watts sideband. I haven't yet built the lower sideband filter. I'm still working on this FET amp. I spent some time reading the handbook, and the guy had the IRF, what is this thing I'm using here? IRF, the one I've been using all along, IRF 510. He's using 2 of them in push-pull and getting 60 and 70 watts out on the whole HF spectrum in the handbook. He's using 28 volts on the drain. I'm using 12. He said he would get 10 to 20 out using push-pull 2 IRF 510. So I'm still using just one of them, and I'm only getting 3 out. I'm not convinced I'm driving the thing as hard as I'm supposed to be. It's a power thing again. It's power versus volts. I'm still having a little difficulty with that. I told you, you mentioned that I should try a 2-3 winding on the output to transformer, and I did a bunch of experimenting with number of windings, trying to find a optimum number of windings, and what I'm currently sitting on is three to six, and I super glued two FT37 dash whatever they are, the ferrite ones, 47s. Super glued two of them little ones together, and they don't get hot. The other ones we're getting roasting hot. I think mostly due to the wire heating up. I don't think the cores were getting hot, but the wire was sure getting hot. I was pushing it pretty hard there, but I think I got it under control, and I do see where the handbook recommends, like you say, either 1-3 or 2-3, and depending on the amount of power you're driving, you know, how many turns. Anyway, I wound up with 3 to whatever I said there. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Well, great. Yeah. Well, the joys of double sideband. I think it's fun. It's funny. I was reading the handbook yesterday. My new 2002 edition picked up at the McKempton Racetrack Hamfest a couple weeks ago. And I was looking at the SSB section, and they were discussing the role of the lower sideband or upper sideband filter. And they pointed out that because the skirts on the filter are never vertical, I guess, unless you're using, you know, digital software filters, but the crystals that those of us in the analog world are dealing with, the skirts are never vertical. They're always skirts, actually, and so to get complete elimination of that carrier, you have to sacrifice the lows in the audio signal just to move the filter skirt up to the point where you're dropping the carrier completely or almost completely. And so they say by necessity you're going to lose the lower up to about 300 hertz in the voice band there. Of course, you don't need that. You don't need most of that. But I think that is what people notice as being very different when you call them with a double sideband signal, because, of course, those lows are still in there, and they're in there twice. These guys, of course, are just listening to one side, but they may be getting a lot more low than they would get from a standard SSB a transmitter. So that's the comment I often get from when I'm using the DSB rigs. And I had mine on yesterday, and I had it on 40 meters. I had my 40-meter rig on. And I'm disappointed by 40 meters here, because you don't get the kind of really nice rag chews that you get back in the States. It's a lot more kind of contest kind of QSOs, even when there doesn't need to be. I mean, yesterday I worked a special event station in Germany, and I don't know what the special event was. I think it had something to do with excuse me, with the World Cup of soccer coming up. But well, the rig worked into Germany just fine, but on 40 double sideband. But the QSO was sort of just, you know, 5.9 goodbye kind of thing. But I was happy to make the QSO anyway, so that was good. Hey, but with your friends there on 75, have you suggested that they switch back and forth between upper and lower while you're transmitting? People usually get a real hoot out of that. You know, they hit the USB button there and listen to you on upper. Now you've got to remind them to come back, or else you'll lose them unless you're running a direct conversion receiver. Now, because I sometimes I do this when I'm using the Drake 2B as the receiver, and if I don't hear them, I have to quick switch over, and I realize they didn't switch back when it came time to transmit. I think one of my favorite stories, homebrewing stories, is when I finally got my 17-meter single sideband rig going after a year or so of on-the-air activity with a double sideband rig on 17. So finally, I got, you know, I moved into the late 1950s with, and went from double sideband into single sideband, and I called a guy WB6KOK. And he had been used to hearing me on double sideband, and I didn't mention to him that this was a new rig. And after a couple of transmissions, he came back and he said, "Something's wrong, Bill. Something's wrong with your rig. The other sideband, it's gone." KL7RM, zero HPR.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I mentioned that, and some of the old timers get on there and they said, "Oh yeah, I flipped over to your other sideband, and you're fine, and I don't hear any carrier, and I can hear you just fine on the other sideband, and they're both balanced perfectly around 39-33." And one fellow came on. He said, "Oh yeah, I've got this software-defined radio, and I think it's one of those flex radios." And he said it has the ability to transmit in double sideband. And he was asking me why in the world he would ever need that. And I was kind of at a loss to explain why a commercial rig would ever need to be able to transmit in double sideband unless you wanted to use it for experimenting. But I said that apparently there's some difficulties hearing a double sideband transmission on a direct conversion receiver. It's hard to get synchronized exactly phase locked. You know, apparently there's some cancellation that happens if you're transmitting on double sideband and receiving on direct conversion. But anyway, he had turned on his double sideband and he was listening to me, and then apparently he turned it back to lower sideband, and I'm transmitting on my main rig to him single sideband upper sideband, and I'm calling him expecting him to be able to hear me on double sideband, and I called three or four times right on the net frequency on the wrong sideband. And the net controller, you know, I switched back to lower sideband. The net controller says, "Hey, did you hear Mike give you a call?" And I was really surprised that the net control heard me on the wrong sideband. And apparently he had gone and fiddled with his rig and had set a switch to disable some of his input filtering so that he could listen to wide audio. He likes wide audio. There's a whole subculture that like that. So he disabled his receive input filtering, and consequently was hearing the wrong sideband just fine. Anyway, I thought that was interesting that I got the wrong guy trying to talk on the wrong sideband there. I wasn't expecting that. M0HBR KL7R.
KL7R and 0HBR, yeah. it is great fun. One of the things that happened to me when I first put the double sideband rig on 17 was that I had a couple of guys come on frequency. You know, I'd be calling CQ, and they'd come on and they'd say, you know, "Well, old man, listen, I've got to tell you, you're transmitting on the wrong sideband on 17. It's upper, so go to USB." I mean, in both cases, they really meant well. They were trying to be helpful, but it was kind of fun to go on to explain to them that, well, yeah, I am, but I'm also transmitting on the correct sideband, and that usually led to a discussion of the transmitter. We've talked about this, but DSB sometimes gets people's back up a little bit, and they start complaining about, you know, wasted the spectrum and all that. But, well, come on. We're running QRP rigs, and especially if you're using a direct conversion receiver, you can listen to both sides and make sure that you're not QRMing anybody. And it's experimental. It's one of the, I think it's worth the price and spectrum to have a few more people out there actually experimenting and building rigs. Yeah, the experimentation factor, definitely. And so, I don't think there'll be too many complaints. So I've run this 40 meter rig on DSB, and we have a little bit more space on 40 now in the UK because the frequency allocation increased last year. So I never get any complaints. So we'll keep at it. Yeah, you talked about FET amps. The June QST has a really good article on a 600 watt FET amp using a pair of dual FETs in push pull, and the guy who homebrews the power supply, the high current power supply, he keeps the voltage at 50 volts for safety reasons, and this thing turns out 600 watts. So I like the article. I like this whole approach. I wish I had it with me here because I'd give it a more precise reference, but I left it downstairs. And in this house, this is a very vertical London house mic, and a trip downstairs is a bit of a journey, so we'll have to leave the reference until the next edition. But, when you do get the filter in there, then you get into the adventure of making sure that your carrier frequency is lined up properly in relation to the bandpass of the filter, and you really gotta fidget with it. And I'm sure there's very precise ways of doing it with advanced test gear, but I don't have any of that stuff now, and I had even less of it when I was building this rig out in the Azores. So the way I did it was one night, SM4FQW and I, we got on 17 meters, and I said to him, all right, look, you're going to help me now. We're going to do this by ear. And he listened, and I took my little screwdriver and went in there and put it on the capacitor that was across the crystal for the carrier oscillator, and I just moved that thing up and down, and he kept telling me better, worse, more carrier, less carrier, until we found that that real kind of sweet spot, and just left it right there. And it was quite a lot of fun. And as I heard his comments, I could visualize what was going on. If I moved it a little bit too far away, I lost all the highs. If I moved it little too in the opposite direction, I would get too much carrier. And so there was one spot where, bingo, that was it. And I put it there and left it there and never moved it again. KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, Roger. That's the next big thing. These crystals are for 3932. And the net's on 3933. I don't know if that's a happy coincidence. I don't know if that means that the crystals are going to be on the lower sideband where they're supposed to be without any adjustments, or if I'm going to have to pull the crystals up to match whatever center frequency I want. I imagine it's going to be pretty tough. I'm kind of hoping to get by with just a couple of crystals. Maybe not do a really good job of completely removing the wrong sideband, just get rid of most of it, and I'll do a little audio shaping, and concentrate more on my audio so I'm not doing spread spectrum transmitting and wasting my power that way on stuff that is basically useless and outside of received passband. So as far as adjusting filters, on the Elecraft list, they use audio spectrum analyzers like you see in Digipan or Spectran. The software, the PSK software, has a fast Fourier transform waterfall spectrum, audio spectrum analyzers in them. And what they do is they inject a wideband noise into a filter using like a what do you call those things? Antenna noise bridge. You use a noise bridge and inject wideband noise into a filter, and then you listen to the output on the transmit frequency with a receiver, and you can just tune the passband to the filter right there in the audio spectrum analyzer. I've done that with the ATS-3 and some other stuff. It's a pretty common practice with K2s. So they actually have noise sources for K2s, K1s. Well, K2s for adjusting. K2 has an adjustable crystal filter. The crystal filters have little variable capacitors on them, varactors, and so you can vary the bandwidth of the filters, and they use that technique. I was going to make another comment about double sideband. I think I've said it before, but when I was out in the bush, I had a little rig I made on double sideband, and the guys could hear me better on one watt double sideband than they could hear me on 2 watt CW. And I knew it wasn't true, but I think they could just decode the voice better in their head than they could decode the CW. Anyway, I was able to get through and better with double sideband voice than I was with the narrowband CWs. Makes no sense, but that's a fact. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. I guess this is something that they have failed to factor into in the big debate about CW. You know, they always talk about the CW advantage over phone. I guess we have to admit that it's real. But speaking as a phone guy, I think I'd make the point that you just made, Mike, and that is that if the phone has a definite advantage, I would put it at probably, 10 dB if you're dealing with folks who can't copy CW. I think that might be what you're talking about with in that case. But we'll stay away from that religious debate. I just wanted to mention a couple of other things that I've been involved in kind of different weird electronic projects this week. The March edition of QST had an article, the amateur satellites piece by Steve Ford, had a WB8IMY. Had an article called "What's Up," and it's just about satellites that are currently operating in an orbit. And I don't know, every once in a while I get the satellite urge, Mike. I think you do too. And I felt the urge to listen to something from orbit yesterday. And Oscar 52 is up there, and this is an interesting spacecraft. I don't think it gets enough credit for what it is, but it's frequently called VUSAT, and it's put up by the Indian radio amateurs, built in India, launched in India too, which is I think extremely cool and impressive. And it is it's 70 centimeters up, 2 meters down, SSB and CW, and when I read this, I said, man, I want to listen to this thing. And I threw together a very small and simple satellite receive station. It consists of my Sony little portable ICF SW7600GR shortwave receiver that I carry around when on trips. This is a little thing. It's about the size of a small paperback. It's got a BFO in it, and I carry it with me when I travel. And then I have this little Hamtronics receive converter that takes 2 meters and puts it down on 10. I went on to the website called Heavens Above, and which is a wonderful website, and he gave me an online prediction of when this thing was going to be overhead. It came over London at about 22:39 local time last night, And so I came up to the shack and fired up the receiver and put the little 9-volt battery on the converter. My antenna was a loop made out of refrigerated tubing, and right on cue, man, really strong SSB signals coming through. I heard DL1 SMG on CW, EA7 Hotel Golf, EA1 FYM, and really, really coming through. It reminded me, it was a kind of a flashback to RS-10, RS-12 days with the Russian satellite. But very impressive, and congratulations to the Indian amateurs who sent that thing into space, KL7R and ZOHB on.
Roger, Bill, that's pretty interesting, and congratulations to you on using that that lash up. That's definitely homebrew, a way to use your the RX Rexall drug receiver. What was that thing? The $2 receiver and something as a satellite rig. That'd be something. It's great, and yeah, the Indian hams, they seem pretty active. They're pretty active on Echolink and also with QRP, and pretty sharp cookies. And fine on Oscar 52. I haven't been doing any satelliting here lately. My satellite antennas were ugly enough that my neighbor, who's a really pleasant fellow, said, "Hey Mike, what's that one for?" I took that as a subtle hint that he would like it removed, so I took it down. Bill, M0HBR, KL7R.
Oh yeah, they get ugly, but they're cool looking. I my satellite antenna, when I was in the Dominican Republic, I built it out of scrap lumber and refrigerated tubing. It was a 5-element, 2-meter quad, elevated 45 degrees above the horizon, and spun around with a little TV rotor. And I had it sitting up on the roof of my house in this very nice suburban neighborhood in Santo Domingo. And boy, my neighbors were polite, because if there was anything that could have provoked a complaint, that would have been it. But I think they were scared of the thing, because it looked like it was based on an article in 73 magazine, and I think they called it the Death Ray. That's what it looked like. It looked like something right out of Buck Rogers. Actually, the receive antenna that I used last night is one of the elements from that same device, and you can see a picture of it. It's on my new website, and this gives me an opportunity to plug my new website, Mike. I'm trying to get people to visit it. It's www.gadgeteer.us. And so, people can take a look. There's a picture of my Death Ray five-element 2-meter quad there. But I know what your neighbors were thinking. Yeah, and another weird electronic project that we've had going here. Hold on, I see somebody coming in. Who's this? Who is this? It's Maria. Good morning, Maria. All right. Yeah, go. Okay, Maria's now in the Solder Smoke Studios. Anyway, we've had a weird electronic week. We live, well, all of South London is in the approach pattern for Heathrow. Heathrow Airport's about 20 miles from here. So when the planes come over here, I mean, they're not buzzing the house or anything. They're up at about probably at 5,000 or 6,000 feet when they come over here. But there's a steady stream, and one goes over during the day every 45 seconds. And actually, it's kind of nice. It's like a highway in the sky, and as I look out the window here, I can see them going by. So a while back, I got a little aircraft band receiver going in the shack, and occasionally I'll turn it on and listen to the chatter. It's really pretty boring. You know, it's all the same. It's just instructions from flight control and a lot of the stuff, you know, and descend to 4100 and all that kind of thing. But I mentioned to my wife that I could, as we watched the planes go over, I mentioned that I could, that we could listen to them. And she said, "Oh, I would love to listen to them. And I'd love to listen to them in the kitchen when I'm, you know, preparing lunch or whatever in the kitchen." So I dragged out one of the old aircraft receivers that I picked up today at a ham fest and set it up in the kitchen. So I think right now we have the probably the only kitchen in London with a with the aircraft receiver playing in the background, and it's nice. Every once in a while, as the squelch, kicks in, and we hear, speedboat 415 descending to 3000, heading 270, that kind of stuff. Speedboat, we've discovered, is the call sign for British Airways, so we have lots of speedboats coming by. But I don't know. Some of our neighbors have come in and they've heard it, and they're interested in this. So this may be the beginning of a fad, Mike. I don't know. KL7R M0HBR.
That's way cool there, Bill. KL7R back. So I imagine the pilots have European and British accents. That must be entertaining. What you said there reminded me of something. We lived in the bush. We lived in a highway maintenance camp that was south of Anchorage, and about 70 miles south of Anchorage in a mountain pass, you could get channel 2, which is 55 megahertz. If you had a real high gain antenna with a preamp, and if you were standing in a particular spot about 600 feet away from the house, and if the antenna was at a right height above ground, my stepfather took an antenna and put it in the bucket of a front end loader, and put a generator and a TV in there with a preamp. And they had this guy sitting in the bucket with the antenna, and they're looking all around the camp, for a really hot spot, and they find this hot spot that's like I say, 600 feet away from the house, and they put the antenna at the exact spot where they found this hot spot, and they put the preamp on around 600 feet of twin lead back to the house, and so we could watch channel 2. But what was interesting was that when jets took off from Anchorage, you could see all of this ghosting that would last a long time. So you were getting reflections, short path, a direct path, and then reflections off of jets as they were going. So you might be able to do a six meter bounce to the west coast or the east coast of the United States there off of those jets. You'd have to talk your neighbors into letting you put up a 6 meter antenna and trashing their television, but that's a thought there. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Oh, yeah, of course. Well, all true radio amateurs, when they look out their window and see a steady stream of 747s going by, of course, our first thought is, I wonder what the resonant frequency of that wingspan is, and wouldn't it be neat to use that as a parasitically driven element out there? I'm not sure the authorities would appreciate that. I won't be making any efforts to use them as passive repeaters, but it must happen. I mean, most of the people I'd be talking to are kind of to the southwest of me in southwest England, where most of the population is. And, if I'm sending up 2 meter signals up in that area, in that direction, I mean, there must be some bounce off the aircraft going on. I'm sure if we Googled this, there have been QSOs and studies and things like that done. Oh, you've done a quick calculation there. 1.5 megahertz. Yeah, okay. All right. We'll have to explore this further. But, yeah. Oh, hold on a second, Mike. Hold on. Maria, come here. Okay, come here. We've got to work with Maria here a bit. There we go. Yeah. What else? I have a list of things I wanted to tell you about. Oh, yeah, in keeping with the sort of the VHF-UHF theme of the second part of the show, I at the Hamfest, I ran into some guys who were doing ATV, amateur television here, and that got me interested in that. And they mentioned that they have a live stream from their AM from their ATV repeater. And so I logged onto the website and was watching that a bit yesterday. It was kind of, it was really interesting. And I guess you have to figure out when the activity is going to be taking place in London and be there at the right time. But it's the GB3HV, that's Golf Bravo 3 Hotel Victor, a website, and they have a live stream for their 23-centimeter ATV operation. It was that was pretty cool. And maybe I'll use my 2-meter, new 2-meter receive capacity to listen for 2-meter AM. There was a lot of activity here last year. I'm hoping it's still going this summer because I'd like to get into that. Yeah, you mentioned the FDIM stream. What was that like? The timing was bad for me, but we had a. I saw the messages. But what was it? Sort of a virtual visit to FDIM.
I guess it would help if I use the right microphone here. It looked like a state fair. People were wandering by and looking at stuff for sale and things like that. I'll have to look out your GB3HV. I did see a marshmallow gun. The guy had was apparently selling marshmallow guns. So I looked that up. I've been real interested in tennis ball launchers. Like a potato gun, only air powered. Anyway, this guy, it was a marshmallow launcher that was breath powered, and that was basically, I watched it for at 3 a.m. this morning. I watched it for a few minutes, and then went back to bed. All right, Bill. I guess it's time to wind down. I think Maria would like some breakfast there. Back to you there. I was going to say, that 1.5 megahertz is 468 divided by 300 feet is the length of a half-wave dipole in feet. So if the wingspan is 300 feet, that's 1.5 megahertz, which is right at the top end of AM broadcast, or the bottom end of 160 meters. that might be fun. All right, Bill, M0HBR, KL7R.
You're going to be causing some trouble with these calculations. My 160-meter enthusiast will be lobbying for increased wingspan so they can take advantage. Okay. One thing we didn't do last time and we have to do this week is Solder Smoke mailbag, and we've gotten some good mail. But before I start that, I want to just mention that I already plugged the website, but we have something now that people have been asking us for, and that is a place where we can make note of some of the websites that we've mentioned and put some more details about what we're up to. With the new website, I put a blog up. It's so easy. I mean, you put a blog up in about 5 minutes. So I put up a blog that is linked to the new website, and I'll try to put up the URLs of the websites that we mentioned during the show, and so people can go there. To find the blog, just go to the www.gadgeteer.us website, and you'll see the link to the blog. And I'll try to throw in the info on the sites that we've been discussing. But now, listen, a new feature, a new sound effect here for Solder Smoke. Gentlemen, welcome to Solder Smoke Mailbag. How's that? That's a real gong. Anyway, this week we have mail from Mark, KA6WKE. He wrote in to say that he listens to Solder Smoke while programming. We thought that was very cool. And he asked some questions about diplexers and duplexers. I've passed them on to you, Mike. You're the guru on that stuff. And but thanks very much to Mark for the mail. We also got some nice mail from Merv, Mike 3, Lima Yankee Juliet. Terry, WA0ITP, wrote in and told us that he'd be listening to the show while on his way to the 4 days in May QRP event. I asked him to keep an eye out for George Dobbs and to pass our regards if he sees him out there. Jack, G3PVG, wrote in to comment on telescoping fiberglass antenna poles and where to get them. I really appreciate the info, Jack. Thanks. We got another nice email from our friend Nigel, M0NDE, down there in Dover, regards to the homebrew community down there near the White Cliffs. Nigel, thanks for the email. And I got a nice note from Paolo, who is Charlie Tango 1 Echo Fox Lima. He also holds the call Golf Zero Mike Uniform Whiskey. Paolo is in Portugal now, but spent a lot of time growing up in the UK, and actually lives in the neighborhood that my kids currently go to school in. He's currently operating in a very antenna-restricted area near the Eiffel Tower, and I told him that must be tough. It must be tough to be antenna-restricted and near the Eiffel Tower. What a magnificent tower that would be for, imagine your tri-bander on top of that thing. But regards to Paolo, and thanks for the nice note. And finally, we got an email last night from Mike, KD5KXF. We appreciate the mail, and keep it coming in. You can send it to, let's see what email address to use. You could just send it to n2cqr@awrl.net, and I'll pass it along to Mike whenever it comes in. But yeah, Mike, let's wrap it up. It's been a lot. It's been interesting as always. I've enjoyed hearing about the DSP project, and I hope the Solder Smoke listeners out there enjoy it also. It's getting late for you, and you're right. It's time for a bowl of cereal for 6-year-old Maria here. You've been very patient. KL7R, M0HBR.
So you bought a gong. That's great. I always think of James Coburn and My Man Flint whenever I hear a gong there, Bill. Okay, well, have a happy morning there, and I think I'll head off to bed here. I'm feeling much better now. Maybe I'll get this bolted up here before Monday. We've got great weather, though. I may actually get out and try to enjoy some of the weather. 73, guys, M0HBR, KL7R.
All right, we've got to close with Dave. Seven, three, Mike.